think we should begin today with the Digital Journals Research Group here at Oslo Met. I have, as leading the group, as Oslo Westrum, the pleasure to welcome Stefan Bach, who traveled here from Berlin to present his previous work, including an award-winning research article in Digital Journalism, and his ongoing work with collaborators such as David and Rob, who are also present here today. And you currently work at Mozilla Foundation and working without boundaries between academia, activists, different organizations, and research that help us go beyond perhaps somewhat what we had previously imagined. And I'll let you have the scene. We very much look forward to hearing you present, Stefan.
Thank you. Thanks for coming. And as Oskar mentioned, in this talk I will present two things. First, I will present some of the findings of my dissertation. And in the second half of this presentation, I will talk about the ongoing work or the most recent work that I've been doing together with David and Raoul about civic tech and data journalism in Europe and Africa. But first, about my own dissertation, where I looked in Europe specifically the entanglements between data journalists and civic tech activists. And first of all, what is civic tech? So civic tech is roughly about the development of tools that make it easier for citizens to engage with their governments. So very often, civic tech organizations develop parliamentary monitoring websites that make speeches in parliament more accessible, or that make it easier for users to find and contact their representatives in parliament, for example. And as you can see here on the slide, these civic tech initiatives have developed a very close relationship with data journalists. There's a lot of institutional support to bring these groups together from some media organizations, but also from foundations like the Knight Foundation in the US. There are a lot of local and national events that try to bring journalists and civic technologists together to collaborate in joint projects like Hex Hackers or the Code for All initiative. I gave the example of Code for Germany here. And interestingly, practitioners like to point out how similar they are. So the data journalists and civic technologists themselves draw themselves together. They like to put themselves together. An example that I put here on the slide is Code for Africa, which describes itself as Africa's largest civic technology plus data journalism initiative. However, despite those obvious connections, the relationship between data journalism and civic tech has not received a lot of attention in media and journalism studies. And I think that this is a missed opportunity, because I think we can learn a lot from the relationship between these actors and the dynamics between them. And I want to just give two reasons for that. The first one is that civic technologists and data journalists form what Andreas Hepp describes as pioneer communities for the use of data in journalism and civil society. This means that they develop new practices and ideas around the use of data, and those practices and ideas became influential in the sense that they are being adopted by other actors. And also, because these actors are pioneers whose practices are adopted elsewhere, we can presume that the relationship and the dynamics that we can observe between them will also spread elsewhere, as journalism and civil society in general relies more and more on data. The second reason is that I think that it is an opportunity to understand data journalism more as a dynamic set of practices that crosses organizational and institutional boundaries. It is still very common in journalism studies to understand journalism as a more or less coherent professional field, despite all the acknowledgments of blurry boundaries. And what I think is even more problematic is that journalism studies tends to only look at how outsiders affect journalists, rather than asking how journalists are also affecting others. So we need a more holistic approach to understand the dynamics between journalism and the larger environment in which it is practiced. I think that studying these dynamics is an opportunity to develop also new theories and understandings of journalism today that are not necessarily based on this idea that it is a coherent field where outsiders have some influence on. Before I go into my findings, just very briefly about the methods that I used. So in my dissertation, and partly also in the paper that I've done with David and Raoul, I relied on qualitative research methods. In my dissertation, I used a grounded theory approach because the idea of theoretical sampling was very convenient for my approach to this more exploratory data analysis that I had. And I was inspired by practice theory and combined content analysis, interviews, and also qualitative network analysis, and in particular participatory mapping, which means that I gave my interviewees a blank piece of paper and asked them to draw me a map of all the communities that they feel belonging to professionally. And this helped me to see, as Weber would put it, processes of communitization across organizations and institutions, which was obviously very helpful for this research project. Before I go into the theory of my findings, I want to just give you two examples that illustrate how data journalists and civic technologists are entangled. And the first example that you see here is called Your Next MP, which is a project by the British civic tech organization My Society. And the background of this project were the elections in the UK in 2015. And at that time, the British government didn't provide an official, freely available database of all the candidates in the upcoming election. So Your Next MP was a crowdsourcing approach to collect this data and to create this freely available database. And My Society also developed small widgets, so JavaScript applications that others could embed on their website, that basically just showed all the candidates which are standing in the constituency. And this tool was used by some local newspapers and local activist groups to show who's standing in the upcoming election. So in this example, you have a civic tech organization that provides a technological infrastructure which is used by journalists. Journalists mostly use the database, but also by local activist groups. However, it's not always like one-sided that you have like a civic tech organization just providing technology that journalists use. You also have a circular process often. The background of the example that I have here on the slide is that in Germany, members of parliament can pose questions to governments in so-called kleine Anfragen, which translates to minor interpolations. And in 2014, journalists from the German newspaper Zeit Online collaborated with the Green Party in Germany to get data about the status of the railroad bridges in Germany. And then they ran a story based on this data showing the conditions of all those bridges. Later, this investigation became an inspiration for the Open Knowledge Foundation in Germany, which is the biggest civic tech organization in Germany, to develop a new project, which is called kleineanfragen.de. And this makes basically the data coming out of these minor interpolations more accessible and searchable. So you can search through all the data from all the local and national parliaments in Germany on this website. And you can get email alerts for keywords and so on and so forth. And this website quickly became a standard tool for almost all the journalists that I interviewed for my dissertation. So here you have basically like journalists giving inspirations to civic technologists who develop a tool that is then used by journalists. So you have like really, as I said, a circular process. I chose these examples because they illustrate an important point that I want to make. In all of these examples, civic technologists and data journalists did not directly collaborate with each other, but they still profited from each other's projects and ideas. Your Next MP, kleineanfragen.de, and the investigation by Zeit Online were developed completely independently without any involvement from the other side. And I suggest that these examples illustrate that we often have this seemingly seamless transition between civic tech and data journalism projects. And I argue that this seamless transition is possible because they have overlapping skills and complementary ambitions. Both data journalists and civic technologists want to provide a public service that somehow empowers citizens, and they both fundamentally rely on data to provide these services. This doesn't always mean that they always want exactly the same thing, but it means that their distinct goals are very often complementary to a high degree. Following Andreas Hepp and Nick Coultry, we can therefore call the entanglements or describe the entanglements between data journalists and civic technologists as figurations. A figuration is a network of human actors based on interlocking practices and shared meanings. Interlocking means that the practices of these actors are basically complementing each other. This is what I've just described as this seamless transition that is possible. And shared meaning means that the practices have a shared purpose. This is what I describe as complementary ambitions. And this shared purpose means that it's easy for members of a figuration to conceive each other as complementary. This graphic is an attempt to visualize the figuration formed by civic technologists and data journalists. And the main argument behind this graphic is that because the practices of data journalists and civic technologists are interlocking, we can describe them as existing along a shared continuum of practices. At one end of this continuum, you have practices of facilitating. And facilitating means enabling others to take action themselves. And this is very much what civic technologists do. So a parliamentary monitoring website developed by a civic tech organization is not designed usually to proactively inform users about something. It is designed to enable them to inform themselves or to take action themselves, like contacting their representatives in parliament when they feel inclined to do so. At the other end of this continuum, you have practices of gatekeeping, which really refers to this journalistic role model of being a gatekeeper for publicly relevant information. So gatekeeping is about directing public debate, about proactively informing people about things which are considered relevant. It is not about enabling them to do what they feel inclined to do. It is about, as journalists like to put it, having impact. What you can see in the middle is an attempt to locate different individuals within this figuration. And the idea here is that all the data journalists and civic technologists that I interviewed to some extent do both. They engage in practices of facilitating and gatekeeping, but they differ in how they emphasize and combine those practices. So depending on how they balance facilitating and gatekeeping, we can put them into these different groups. And you can already see two of those groups on the slide. The group that I locate mostly towards facilitating is unsurprisingly a group that I call facilitators. And those are basically individuals working in civic tech organizations like My Society or the Open Knowledge Foundation in Germany, who are not directly involved in media organizations and who only occasionally interact with journalists. Those people think of themselves as tool suppliers, more or less. They say like, oh, we provide convenient facilitating services, but we are not doing journalism. They refuse the idea that they would do anything journalistic. And they also think of journalism primarily as storytelling. And they argue, well, storytelling is not our remit. This is not what we are doing. The group that most strongly leans towards gatekeeping is the group that I call the normalizers. And normalizers are typically journalists working in national news media with a formal education in journalism who strongly identify with traditional notions of professional journalism. And I call them normalizers because they normalize the relationship with civic tech and also data journalism itself by putting it into traditional journalistic traditions and routines. So, for example, they argue that data journalism is not a new form of journalism. It is just a methodological competence, a methodological competence that allows them to do journalism that has been done for decades, but better, more effectively, more efficient, on a larger scale, more regularly, but not fundamentally different. And normalizers do not reject civic tech. They generally appreciate the work that is done by civic tech activists, but they deny that what civic technologists are doing has anything to do with journalism. And they also refuse to engage in practices of facilitating themselves. When you only look at these two groups, you have a relatively clear division of labor. On the one hand, you have the civic tech activists who say like, oh, we don't do storytelling, we just provide the services. And on the other hand, you have the journalists who say like, oh yeah, we are the storytellers. We don't want to do anything facilitating. However, there's a huge gray area between these two groups where the distinction between facilitating and gatekeeping is a little bit less clear. And this gray area is populated by two other groups that I have called translators and experimenters. And there are a few things that these two groups have in common. First, they are both working in non-traditional setups. So they work, for example, in non-profit newsrooms, in news startups, or in other rather exceptional and non-traditional arrangements within media organizations. So they are what Valerie and Avery called intra-loopers yesterday. And second, some of these individuals do not have a formal education in journalism, and all of them do not identify with traditional notions of journalism to the extent that normalizers do. They are much more open towards inviting other ideas about journalism. Now let me just briefly introduce these two groups. The first groups are the translators. And translators are individuals that simultaneously work in civic tech organizations and media organizations. And those individuals are trying to combine facilitating and gatekeeping in ways that mutually reinforce each other. The example here is the non-profit newsroom Correctiv from Germany, which is very similar to ProPublica in the US, which means it specializes on long-term investigations which are then shared with other media outlets. Different to ProPublica in the US, however, Correctiv has an educational agenda. It tries to educate its users to be like citizen journalists, if you will. The example that I put on the slide here is an investigation by Correctiv about the nursing home sector in Germany. And beside a number of investigative stories, one of the outcomes of this investigation is this tool that you see here. This is a tool that allows users to explore the data that Correctiv has collected themselves. So you can put your address here, and then you get a map that shows all the nursing homes in your local area and provides additional information about these nursing homes. However, Correctiv doesn't only provide this information. It also encourages and tries to enable its users to do their own follow-up investigations. It provides tools and tutorials for doing that. And interestingly, it also even included a civic tech application from the Open Knowledge Foundation in Germany into this application. This is the button that you see here at the bottom of the slide. So this button appears on every search page. And when you click it, it opens a pre-filled Freedom of Information requests from the Freedom of Information request website of the Open Knowledge Foundation in Germany. And this request asked for nursing home reports, and when the request was successful, the data was automatically added back to Correctiv's database. So in this example, you have this circular process. Translators are trying to encourage facilitating by using gatekeeping. So by using gatekeeping and highlighting issues in the nursing home sector in Germany in this example, people should get encouraged to use facilitating services, and then they get enabled to do their own follow-up investigations. And when those follow-up investigations uncover new interesting facts, they can be highlighted again via gatekeeping, which again hopefully encourages more facilitation. So it's a circular process, as I've described. Interestingly, though, translators still perceive and treat data journalism and civic tech as distinct entities. They don't try to mash them together, but they try to make them profit from each other in these ways. Last but not least, you have a group that I call the experimenters. And what is interesting about experimenters is that they have a very strong emphasis on facilitating practices. But different to translators, they do not try to combine facilitating and gatekeeping. Instead, they try to integrate facilitating into journalistic practices and identities. The example that you see here, or the examples rather, all come from the local German newspaper Berliner Morgenpost, which became like a front runner for this type of data journalism. And just to illustrate what you see, this example here is called the noise map. And it simply shows the average noise level on a granular level in the city of Berlin. And users can enter their address, and then the map zooms in, and you can see the noise level directly in front of your own house. And these type of individualized information services are very popular and very typical for the work of these experimenters. It is interesting that experimenters rationalize these services as an expansion of traditional journalism. They argue, and those are quotes from my interviews, that they were serving the information needs of communities with these services, that they would give their users a better understanding of their own surroundings, and that they would provide a factual basis for public debates. And what I think is interesting is that all of these aspirations are not new. They have been part of traditional journalism for a very long time. But experimenters argue that they can fulfill those aspirations without necessarily having to tell a story, but providing these individualized information services. So this way they try to integrate facilitating into traditional journalistic aspirations and ideas. Until now, I've presented the findings of my dissertation, which, as I've mentioned, was done in Europe, mostly in Germany and in the UK. Towards the end of my PhD, I was wondering, though, how transnational is this really? Is this what I've presented so far really particular and specific to the European context, or is it applicable to other contexts as well? And, well, this was the question that David, who was the first author, Raoul and me were trying to address in this paper, which is about to be published very soon in Digital Journalism. And in this paper, we were interested in how civic tech and civic tech organizations in Europe and Africa relate to data journalism and how they think they influence data journalism in these two distinct contexts. We relied on data that I collected for my dissertation in Europe and on data that David and Raoul collected for civic tech organizations that operate in 11 different African countries. And we were particularly interested in understanding the similarities and differences of civic tech organizations in these regions and what might potentially explain those similarities and differences. So what we found is that on the one hand, civic tech organizations in Europe and Africa are very similar in their practices and identities. At the same time, however, the ways in which they relate to data journalism and in which they try to complement data journalism is very different in these two different regions. So I explained previously that in the European context, you have this relatively clear division of labor when you only look at civic tech organizations and data journalists. Civic tech organizations in Europe usually refuse the idea that they do journalism, and they also refuse largely to engage in practices of gatekeeping themselves. In the African countries, however, civic tech organizations much more directly try to influence data journalism, and they engage in practices of gatekeeping to a much larger extent, especially in cases where they cooperate with data journalists or with journalists in general. Their practices really cut across all these three different groups that I identified in the European context that I marked here on the slide. Just to give you an example of how this looks like, this is a project called Dodgy Doctors from Kenya. The background here is that in Kenya you had a problem with fake doctors, people who treat others without being properly educated. And this tool allows users to just search for their doctors and see whether they are properly registered with local authorities. And this project was done with Code for Africa in collaboration with the daily newspaper The Star. Code for Africa developed the database, and The Star integrated this tool on its website on the health section. So it's not just like a news item, it is like a default tool on this website. On the one hand, this tool is similar to the practices of translators in the sense that it tries to combine facilitating and gatekeeping in ways that mutually reinforce each other. When the story breaks about fake doctors, the usage of this tool increases a lot. So the gatekeeping is really driving the usage of that tool. On the other hand, however, The Star is not interested in training its users to be investigative journalists themselves. It is just trying to provide an information services that helps users to inform themselves in their individual situation. So in that sense, it is also quite close to the work of experimenters, so it really cuts across these two groups in some ways. To explain those similarities and differences, I have to talk a little bit more about civic tech. So far, I've only described what civic technologists do, but I haven't really described why they are doing it. So why are they trying to facilitate others to take action themselves? And the answer is that civic tech as a whole is rooted in what Jenkins has described as participatory culture, a culture which posits that knowledge is richest and most accurate when it reflects the input of a crowd. So the idea here is by making it easier for the public to engage with and influence the decisions of governments, the outcomes of these decision-making processes would be more democratic because they are more representative, because they reflect the voices of more people, essentially. And because we found that these ideas are underlying the practices of civic technologists in both Europe and Africa, we argue that civic technologists as a whole form what Rees has described as the transnational advocacy network that adopts a global project to diverse local contexts. The global project of civic tech, then, is to enable forms of participatory culture in as many different contexts as possible. And this, to some extent, helps to explain the similarities and the differences in these two regions, because in both Europe and Africa, civic technologists have the same global project, but they are confronted with very different contextual environments. So importantly, civic technologists are also recognizing that for this global project, journalism is a necessary component, because they are arguing that for people to be able to participate, they need to be informed. This is a quote also from an interview that I had with a civic tech activist in Germany. So they recognize that for this vision of a more participatory culture to be realized, they need journalism to complement and enable that vision. And when we look now again at the contextual differences between Europe and Africa, there are two contextual differences that we believe are standing out that help to explain the differences. First is that data journalism is much less established in the African countries that we studied. Newspapers there usually don't have the expertise and resources to do data journalism on a regular basis compared to the German and the British context. And second is that in the European context, you have a more diverse media landscape. You have new entrepreneurial forms of journalism that expand and diversify journalism from within. And both the translator and the experimenter group are part of this entrepreneurial forms of journalism. While in Africa, you don't have this to the same extent. Or if it exists, it expresses itself in a different way. So in the eyes of African civic tech organizations, therefore, data journalism is not where it needs to be to effectively complement its own vision of a more participatory culture. And therefore, civic tech organizations in Africa act more as promoters of a very traditional form of data journalism. So they try to actively shape the ways in which data journalism is being practiced in these regions by giving trainings and by, to a much larger extent, also cooperate with journalists. And also because the entrepreneurial forms of journalism do not exist in the African countries to the same extent or in the same form as in Europe, civic tech organizations in Africa also have a bigger niche to fill that they can occupy. These findings suggest that the state of data journalism shapes the practices of civic tech and vice versa. We didn't study this, but it is conceivable that in contexts where you have data journalism but no civic tech organizations, that data journalists would also be more open towards integrating practices of facilitating as part of their journalistic mission, which is something that is very particular in the European context to experimenters. But it is conceivable that it would be more widespread in situations where you don't have something like civic tech. The findings also provide an interesting and, I think, counterintuitive insight. Civic tech organizations in Africa reinforce a very traditional notion of journalism, or data journalism in this case, a notion of journalism that the normalizer group that I identified in Europe identify with the most, while in the European context, you have these new entrepreneurial forms of journalism that expand and diversify journalism. So even though they are outsiders, they are not necessarily trying to change journalism. Rather, they want journalism to work in a very traditional way because this is what they need for their own mission to be able to enable their own mission. I just want to end with just making two points. So first is that the findings of my dissertation, also of the article that I've done with David and Raoul, suggests that journalists and civic technologists shape each other continuously, even if they do not directly collaborate with each other. And therefore, we cannot limit ourselves in journalism studies to only look at direct collaborations or boundary objects. We need to have a more holistic and wider view on these dynamics. And second is that the comparative study that I did with David and Raoul shows that the basic framework that I developed in my dissertation with gatekeeping and facilitating seems to be applicable beyond contexts. However, the specific actor constellations is very specific to the different contexts that you study. So for each context, you can maybe use this framework, but you have to be very careful about how applicable the groups are that I've identified in Europe. I would like to just end with this. At the ICRIA Journalism Studies Section Conference last month, Wiebke Loosen gave a presentation in favor of binary thinking in journalism studies. She argued that binaries are useful to sharpen inquiry. And in relation to this presentation, this article was circulated on Twitter, and I can highly recommend reading it. And I just wanted to put this here to argue that our reaction to the new complexities in journalism shouldn't be to just say it's complicated. As academics, we should try to come up with new ways to simplify these complexities and help us to navigate this new landscape. And I view both my dissertation and the work that I've been doing with David and Raoul as small steps in this direction, and I'm looking forward to continue the discussion here. So thank you for your attention.
I promise not to ask you any questions about the first half, since I've had that platform already. One thing that's interesting, and maybe this is something David and Raoul might want to chime in on as well, are the types. So I follow and I understand that the data journalists and the civic tech people are occupying different roles in the federation. What are the types of projects? I wonder if that may be part of where the differences are, like if some of the civic tech projects in Africa, for instance, are working more towards sort of traditional journalistic roles, you know, like are the widgets and the databases and things performing a role that is in a vacuum or in a place where there is a vacuum of that role being performed, whereas in Europe, you look at like the Berliner Morgenpost, you know, noise mapping, which is all very interesting, may not be as much of an information deficit society. Like Berlin has lots of media doing lots of different things, so there may be lots of ways to access some things, and the civic tech, and yes, they're an enhancement, and yes, they're adding, but are they adding more in the African context, if that makes sense?
I think it's better when one of you.
I completely get what you mean, and I think there are few differences to be nuanced a little bit. but I would say that in general, I think that in the African context is a little bit more of adversarial approach. Like, for example, they were very keen into separating that they weren't either doing journalism, but they were doing more advocacy. And they were filling different roles.
Yeah.
And it was not so much about project, I think it was more organization things.
Okay.
And I think that that might be precisely because the role of media there wasn't as expansive as probably in some European countries.
Yeah.
The other explanation might be that those organizations have connections with the West that are much stronger, but that's more of my own tiny speculation. But some of the things were more about fact-checking the media, or bringing a little, making a data accessible. Very, very advocacy type of projects.
Yeah. I would maybe add, and then Stefan could clarify that as well. What we saw when we did our interviews is how they defined their roles depending on the roles they should be in the civic technology organizations, and as well as the background.
Okay.
So those who are from legacy organizations, the civic tech organizations, would want to think their role as more journalistic.
Right.
And then there was a critical of us because they would want to see that their work is different, more technology oriented, more civic oriented.
Mm.
So maybe we could add as well.
you've already mentioned everything. There's not much to add. But yeah, I don't know enough actually about the African context. That's why I referred to the question to you.
Can I just jump in with follow-up, David? Did you find that a lot of people were coming from legacy news media into these civic tech projects? Because I wonder if that would.
I don't remember the number. Do you remember the number of people? We did put in interviews, and I can, from my head, I can count about maybe five.
Okay. Interesting.
That were, you know, had journalistic backgrounds. But they were very, you know, specific. And at some point, they probably had interviews where you asked, like
what's for example, Catherine
DiCero,
who was a top journalist in Kenya, yeah. And she just screwed it. I'm doing something else. Yeah. There was another one in South Africa whose tagline in LinkedIn was repurposed journalist or something like that.
Yeah.
Like a very clear, like I'm shedding my journalistic past,
yeah.
But still making those affirmations. And a little bit of that was the journalism is not fulfilling what we think it should.
Yep.
And maybe through these civic tech organizations, we can address that.
And that's the when it came to hold, that's the thing that I was also asking about from your perspective, because when we talk about how, you know, complementing how they complement, how, you know, they think they're complementing the work of journalists and news organizations, I think it depends with who you interview. So those ones who are journalists would want to think, okay, I am doing something that is better than journalism.
Yep.
Some are even describing themselves as independent. So they seem to want to shape their past. But the way they work, the way they think, is still defined by their journalistic background. So maybe this has also something to do with the roles and how they define their roles and how they enact those roles in their work.
Yeah, thanks, Stefan. This is really fascinating stuff. But I'm also thinking about these different cultures of civic tech. I'm kind of tempted to say, fuck binaries. That's complicated. I'm wondering about sort of the structural framework for civic tech organization. How does that differ in various cultures, various countries? What kind of economic support systems is there in place in various countries in Africa and Germany and other places? And I was trying to sort of remember, do I have any examples from Norway of civic tech organizations who are collaborating in Germany? Then I couldn't think of one example, actually. And I wonder if it's more sort of within the tech departments of these organizations that these things occur in Norway more than in other countries. And I also wonder, what's the typical lifespan of a civic tech organization? When does something become a civic tech organization or whatever, and when does it turn into a commercial enterprise, or does it turn into a commercial enterprise at some point? And I assume there are lots of cultural differences here, lots of structural frameworks that apply in various cultural disciplines.
So the civic tech organizations we talked with were all in the NGO sector, and some of them are quite old, actually. Like, my society was founded in 2003. Mostly civic tech organizations are usually interested in developing projects that last. So they, like the parliamentary monitoring website of my society exists already since 2007, and it's constantly maintained and updated. They want to induce long-term change, as they put it. They want to make it more normal for the public to engage with their governments, and this requires them to provide services which are popular and regularly used. Across the context, it's interesting that in Africa, the civic tech organizations that we looked at, they all receive funding and training from Western organizations. So they're also part of this nonprofit world where you have big foundations, like the Knight Foundation that I mentioned, give a lot of money to civic tech organizations in both Europe and in Africa. So they have like a very dense network of funders that funds them across different contexts. There was another question that you asked that I maybe forgot.
No, that was about the lifespan of them. If you have some example, do they change? Some of these organizations change over time. Or do they turn into commercial enterprises?
Yeah, you have sometimes blurry lines between for-profit and non-profit. But there are usually in most countries there are long-term nonprofits that also don't change. They have sometimes a small commercial enterprise to fund their nonprofit work, but mostly they are really just dependent on securing funding from governments or from foundations, for example. But you have sometimes also civic tech initiatives or like organizations that count themselves as civic tech that are usually for profit from the start directly.
Yeah. It's related. The question is really related because I was thinking about something very similar. Because when I thought of Code for Africa, I thought of Knight Foundation. And then I was thinking, do you think that the role of experimenter, which you also mentioned, experimenter also being more present in Africa, right? Do you think that their foundations like Knight have had a big influence into shaping that category of?
Oh,
also like making those events more as those project more as like short-term projects that could have a big lifespan.
You mean from experimenters, from the journalists, or from civic tech? No.
The role of foundations in emphasizing certain groups and certain cultures.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely say that. For example, the Knight Foundation has helped to realize something like the experimenter group. This idea of we don't. Concentrate on news, we concentrate on information needs and so on. That definitely fits into the logic of experimenters. What is interesting is that the work of experimenters is usually, even though it integrates facilitating into journalism, it still uses the time span logic of journalism. So they publish that thing and then it's done. Like in very rare cases, they may be updated again after a while when there is like another news that relates to it. But usually they publish it, it's done, and they don't think in long term for these types of projects. So they apply the time logic of journalism to these projects still.
Yeah. And just to add to that, in this specific paper, we didn't do the connection from the data to those specific four categories of individuals, but on the, I would say, probably the final paper from this experience that we are currently writing for a very promising special issue on media communication. We're actually trying to do that connected to the idea of expertise as well. So what expertise comes out of journalism into these people, these actors, and then what expertise goes back into journalism, and how that kind of changes the notion of where it's understood as data journalism. And I think that one of the important things also into those other organizations that are connected with this, it's, for example, most of the people, at least in the ones that we looked at in Africa, they are all trained in data journalist schools or data schools in Germany and these different places. So their skill sets are coming from outside of journalism, but they're all kind of the same. So I don't know if they will reflect that connection in a specific categories, but that's what we're going to try to figure out.
And just to add on that, there is another angle to it, Knight Foundation, and all these other foundations. I think that's a very important area to do more research. Especially in relation to data journalism, but I think some of the citations we had, we looked at the work that has been done by, among others, Kit Wright, Mel Booms, Martin Scott, on humanitarian journalism, which relies a lot on foundations, especially those operating in the global south, one example I have is Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, which is pushing more of humanitarian projects or health projects. And I know that one of the areas that they're focusing on is on health. And they have funded Cook for Africa, and the Deutsche Doctors was one of those that I think easily attracted funding from the United States and other humanitarian organizations. So there's the aspect of foundations and you know, other non-profit organizations setting the agenda for this initiative. There's already research on that, but not particularly when it comes to data journalism.
Thank you. I think this was really fascinating. And also I appreciate the cross-cultural perspective, because we always look into Western context. And I think that this, for my work of with the cross-border investigative journalism, this is, I conclude that this is one area where we can see the force of change in journalism when it comes to boundaries. And so many interesting aspects are sort of at stake here is the autonomy when we talk about the funding of journalism, and also the topic of this gathering, that the different actors. And I think that in investigative journalism, we can clearly see that other actors are picking up on journalism, but for instance, NGOs are many times now funding investigative projects, thereby dissolving the ideas of independence. And I mean, we can also see that in Europe, I think we will see more of it, just because of the possibility to do it, that it's actually working, but also that the legacy news media can't really afford this kind of project, so take it on. Yep. Maybe they publish it when it's finished.
Yep.
But I think this is a very interesting area to study, to tell more about this kind of role change, also from a journalist perspective.
Yeah, that's a good point that, I mean, yeah, NGOs, and I mean also the civic tech activists, they also in Europe, they have the School of Data was mentioned, they give that, and a lot of journalists attend those schools, and so there's this constant exchange. And yeah, I'm curious to see whether civic tech in Europe would also become more journalistic. I wouldn't be surprised if they would pick up more of these practices themselves to make their point.
Thanks, Emma. I was just wondering, and my question is related to the earlier ones, whether the differences in how the interviewees in the three countries understand and conceptualize data journalism, and I guess in relation to seeing civic tech, whether those differences actually change or influenced how you present the configurations of actors? Does it change anything, the differences in different countries,
yeah,
in dynamics in different ways?
So what I can say is that in the European context, the different journalism group that I have, like normalizers, experimenters, and translators, they all have different understandings to some extent of data journalism. I mentioned that the normalizers, they think of it as a methodological competence. The experimenters just say like, oh, data journalism is doing journalism with structured data. So they emphasize the technological dimension of data journalism, but they don't combine it with any way of particular professional practice. And the translators, they usually say like, yeah, you know, it's an expansion of civic tech, because usually those people have more strongly background in civic tech. And they say like, oh yeah, well, for me, data journalism is applied civic tech, one of the interviewees told me. So they think of it more as this combination. They think of it more as a whole, together with facilitating what they do. They always combine the two. With Africa, maybe one of you can tell more.
I think that probably David can also clarify this. When we look more at the profiles of the companies, they would not frame themselves as data journalism. Mm-hmm. They were more data advocates. When we talked with the practitioners, they did make connections to data journalism, precisely because some of them were coming from the industry, saying that, well, the journalists don't have the competency. They don't know how to use this. They don't know how to get data, how to use it, and how to communicate it. And we are taking kind of that role. I don't know if their understanding of data journalism was similar or not to not only to European context, but even across organizations. But they were referring about it with, let's say, that the data was more of the common ground, more than the journalism.
But it's also mostly because there were less of the very few projects that are going on in legacy news media organizations in Africa, and the ones that we tried to do mapping at the beginning to look at products of data journalism in different news organizations, especially English-speaking countries, because they understand English. And we found some in Kenya and in South Africa, and I guess a few other countries, but they were mostly in the two countries. So there is very little understanding, first of all, of data journalism, so that would be different, I guess, because of this hasn't been practiced a lot. And maybe that is why also this organization like Open Up and Code for Africa emphasized data literacy at the beginning, data literacy for journalists and citizens. I think Open Up has played a lot, and it's one of its key projects to make also people aware about data journalism and also done by a sporadic. I think that's also what was different in Africa. So we have few organizations, big organizations, but we have multiple projects supported, in partnership with news organizations. Perhaps it would be important maybe in the future to do proper mapping of this data journalism project.
Maybe just briefly to mention the context, that, because maybe that will explain a little bit why we're looking at civic tech. What David and I did first for the NOGA conference in Ovense was try to map data journalism in African newsrooms. And we saw that there was a lot of data journalism, but that was done by civic techs, not by newsrooms. And that's how we actually turned into the civic tech, and we had our first paper that was also in digital journalism 2 years last year. And then right when we published ours, Stefan's came out, and that's when we started like, oh, this is very, very close together, and then we submitted something to ICA. But we were actually trying to go for the news, found it somewhere else.
Final comment before we round out and continue.
No, I don't remember if you mentioned this, Stefan, you probably did, so sorry for asking. But what exactly do you mean by African journalism or African practices or politics? I mean, does it make sense to talk about African or African?
Well, just as much or little sense as talk about European, I would say. So I mean, I use this now as a just for practicality, but basically what we mean is the civic tech organizations operate in these 11 different countries, and mostly, what was the main focus of your empirical work?
So the reason is Africa is a country. No, Africa is not a country. So the main reason is that these civic tech organizations that we looked at, PNAB, Taking Africa, and Code for Africa, which has as a small organization, identify their mission as African-wide. Like this is, we have an African agenda. I think one of them was identified itself as doing, an African sort of project. So that's how we argued in the paper that we published together, that this, we are not claiming that we are studying all data journalism projects in the entire continent, because that would be impossible. It's a vast continent with 65 nations.
So it's a self-identification.
Yes, that is what they say. God for Africa.
God for Africa. That's kind of where you came from.
But we qualify that and say that they actually present in 11 countries. But they also try as much as possible to have their products in different languages. But the main document that is used in French, English, and Portuguese. So thereby sort of reaching out to the people.
And partly also that the European countries that we studied were closer to each other or more similar to each other, and the African countries were more similar to each other, so it made kind of sense to group them in that way.
Thank you. I think we'll round off there.
Yeah, thanks.